Welcome back to our special hour of Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. The big national political story today is the Republican wave that swept across the nation this election day, capturing governorships and gaining control of the U.S. Senate.
But in the closely watched race for the Senate in New Hampshire, Democratic incumbent Jean Shaheen resisted that wave and defeated Republican Scott Brown, the former senator from Massachusetts.
Tonight, the people of New Hampshire chose to put New Hampshire first.
It was Scott Brown's third run for the Senate in 5 years. In 2010, of course, he shocked Democrats by defeating Martha Coakley in a special election following the death of Senator Ted Kennedy. Then, in 2012, Elizabeth Warren beat him. And last night, he tasted defeat again in New Hampshire.
I accept the decision of the voters, and I have already offered my sincerest congratulations and good wishes to Senator Shaheen.
With us now is Susan Tracy, Democratic consultant, and Rob Gray, a Republican consultant. And joining us now to dissect what happened last night in New Hampshire is Andy Smith. He's a UNH Associate Professor of Practice and Political Science and Director of the UNH Survey Center. Hi, Andy. Good to have you.
Hi, Anthony.
So first, a really simple question. Tell me why you think Jean Shaheen won the Senate race in New Hampshire and beat back that Republican wave.
I think there's really three reasons. First, New Hampshire is a Democratic state by and large, certainly purple, but really trending blue, and it has been doing that more and more over recent years. Secondly, the Democratic electorate in New Hampshire is the social and economic elite electorate, more likely to be highly educated, have high levels of income, and be middle-aged, and all of those things correlate with high levels of turnout even in midterm elections. So Democrats in other parts of the country may have been less likely to go to the polls. Here in New Hampshire, they were still pretty likely to go to the polls. Not as likely as Republicans, maybe, but still, they were not staying home. The second reason is that Jean Shaheen has been a longtime candidate in New Hampshire. She was first elected governor in 1996. Throughout her time in office, she's been quite popular. Her favorability ratings going into this election have been quite high. By contrast, Scott Brown recently moved to New Hampshire, as you mentioned, and he was really hurt by both negative advertisements by Shaheen, but also by the perception by people in New Hampshire that he was a carpetbagger, that he really wasn't from New Hampshire. I think that hurt him, and some of the exit poll data on that seemed to indicate that as well. But the third thing, as relates to Jean Shaheen's experience in politics, is that Jean Shaheen has been known as an expert tactician in politics, that she's been very good at being able to put together get-out-the-vote efforts going back as far as the 1980s with when she was working to run the Gary Hart campaign here in New Hampshire primary. But she's been a nuts-and-bolts political organizer, and she's hired people that have really put together a quite good get out the vote machine in New Hampshire, and in fact, the New Hampshire get out the vote effort was you might say it was the model for the National Democratic Party get out the vote effort that was very successful in 2008 and 2012. So if you put those things together, a popular Democrat in a state that's trending Democratic with a better get out the vote effort than her challenger, it's not surprising to me that she squeaked by.
You know, Andy, I was up there in New Hampshire last night at both Brown headquarters and Jean Shaheen's headquarters, and I was sort of struck by two narratives, and I couldn't decide which one was right. I mean, on the one hand, I thought it was impressive that Scott Brown jumped into this race relatively late and managed to give Jean Shaheen such a run for her money and came within 2 points of winning. On the other hand, you know, I agree with everything you said about Jean Shaheen, and I thought really impressive that she was able to resist that Republican wave. Which of those two narratives do you think is right, or do they not necessarily conflict with each other?
I don't think they necessarily conflict with each other. In fact, I was talking with somebody earlier today that if Scott Brown had spent 10 years in New Hampshire politics and was a better name within the state, he may have been able to win that race yesterday. Mm. But the fact that he had not been in New Hampshire politics, that he was really even had a difficult time sewing up the Republican nomination. He won fairly handily, but he was heavily criticized by his two primary Republican challengers as being from out of state, of being an opportunist. That he was, if he had been a local guy, he would have been in a much better position than if he had been just recently from out of state.
Yeah.
But that said, that really shows the strength of this Republican wave across the country. And the fact that Shaheen was able to weather it here really, I think, points to her skills as a politician and her years in public service here.
Does it also point to sort of another example of New Hampshire? I mean, this isn't the first time that New Hampshire has sort of gone its own way. I mean, you reelected a Democratic governor, Maggie Hassan. You reelected a Democratic congresswoman, and you beat a strong, arguably rising Republican star in Scott Brown. New Hampshire often sort of goes its own way, right?
Well, you know, that may be true, but I think if you look at the demographics of New Hampshire and if you look at the political demographics, particularly over the last 20 to 30 years, it has been becoming more and more of a Democratic state, following the trajectory that the other New England states have taken really since the 1940s or 1950s. New Hampshire is essentially the last Republican domino to fall in New England, and New Hampshire, with the exception of George Bush's narrow win, helped by Ralph Nader in 2000, New Hampshire hasn't elected a candidate for president since George Bush in 1988. There's only been one Republican elected as a governor, and that was Craig Benson in 2004. That was the only one since 1996. This state has been trending more and more Democratic, and it's I wouldn't say that it's a solidly blue state like Massachusetts or Vermont or Connecticut, but it's a state that is heading in that direction.
Andy Smith, stay with us. Stand by. I want to bring back in our political analyst, Susan Tracy, Democrat, and Rob Gray, Republican. Susan and Rob, I'd like you to weigh in on this race. Certainly, Democrats were sweating this one out. I'm interested in your thoughts on the outcome, and also your thoughts on, as many people have been asking today, what next for Scott Brown? What are your thoughts? Susan, you start.
I think we're all joking that he's looking for his next state, maybe in the next New England state. I would tell you, I think I would be more surprised today if Jean Shaheen lost than that she won. I mean, to the points that were made here, she's so popular. She's so hardworking. And Scott Brown was just, a carpetbagger coming into the state. It was just hard for me, at least, to imagine that he could ever win on that race. But, you said something that interested me. I found myself thinking that in this climate, if there was a candidate running against Jean Shaheen who was from New Hampshire, and that was the Republican nominee, would that person have had a better shot than Scott Brown at running against her? I mean, you really got me thinking that if the carpetbagger issue really became the fundamental issue that prevented him,
maybe she's vulnerable in a way that this candidate might not have been able to exploit, but
correct.
Someone else may have been able to.
Yes, correct.
Interesting. Rob Gray?
I think ultimately it came down to the carpetbagger issue. He couldn't get over the top on that. Even anecdotally in the exit polls, you see a lot of conservative Republicans who supported Brown's primary opponents who could not get by the fact that Brown was a foreigner from Massachusetts jumping into this state. And I think they felt that he was more out for any Senate seat as a platform for himself than he was out for New Hampshire. So, on the margins in a two-point race, that can make a big difference.
Andy Smith, I'd love to ask you about something that was curious last night, and I sort of talked to you in the middle of that evening. As you know, most of the networks called the race for Shaheen pretty early, and they turned out to be correct. But then we went through that curious moment where the raw vote count sort of had them dead even for a while. Scott Brown even inched ahead. The party at Brown headquarters sort of started up again. And what happened there?
Well, the town to pay attention to in New Hampshire is Manchester, and its polls close at 7 o'clock, so the vote comes in pretty quickly from Manchester. And if a Republican doesn't get, say, 48-49% of the vote in New Hampshire, in Manchester, they're probably not going to win. And Brown only got about 46% of the vote in Manchester, so I think that was what the exit poll analysts were really looking at. But that said, outside of New Hampshire and Nashua, there are just a lot of small towns to medium-sized towns in New Hampshire that are some solidly Democratic, some solidly Republican. And the feed that we are getting watching these towns come in tends to be kind of late. So it's then a matter of looking at seeing which towns are still out there, which Republican towns and which Democratic towns. And when they come in, you see that the race was bouncing back and forth. There was even a point where there were about 55% of the vote in that Scott Brown pulled ahead of Shaheen. But when you started to look at the towns that were left, you saw pretty clearly that there were just Democratic towns. The only large towns left were Democratic towns. And there really wasn't a way for Scott Brown to victory after that. So I was surprised that the networks called it that early. It turned out that it was correct. I believe ABC even retracted their call on that race at one point in the middle of the evening. But Manchester is really a good spot to look at. You know, if a Republican gets 50% of the vote in Manchester, they win.
Andy Smith, thank you so much for helping us talk through some of the politics in New Hampshire. Andy is a UNH Associate Professor of Practice and Political Science. He's also director of the UNH Survey Center. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and look forward to the 2016 primary.
Right around the corner.
And Susan Tracy and Rob Gray, in the time we have left, if we want to touch on at least some of the ballot questions, sure, if we can. The one that was closest last night and that was called last was the gas tax indexing. You know, it sounds somewhat, economic for people, but people really seem to care about this one. I mean, it was almost 50-50. Ultimately, no longer will the gas tax automatically adjust every year along with inflation. Now, legislators have to vote on it. Part of the argument was lawmakers are supposed to take votes, make them do this. I'm interested in what you think for a ballot question that took a little homework to understand. How do you think this one played out?
Well, it's interesting in that it was the only one of the four ballot questions that was outspent by the other side, yet still prevailed. And usually in ballot questions, if the money's on one side, that side wins. And we saw that in the casino question and the other two questions as well. The cutting the income tax down to 5% passed in the state overwhelmingly in 2000 got 59% of the vote. So I wasn't surprised to see people prevent future tax increases. I think the authors of the question were smart. They didn't repeal the gas tax increase, the initial increase. They just sought to stop the future indexing from happening. And I think because it was reasonable, that's why it passed.
Susan, I want to ask you a question about the casino bill.
Yeah.
Obviously, casinos have not been repealed. It looks like we are going to have a casino on the banks of the Mystic, Slots Parlor in Plainville. This was a case where the money disparity was enormous. Huge amounts spent by the pro-casino side. Less than a million on the anti-casino side. In the end, why do you think voters decided, we're going to keep them?
I think the ads were very effective from Springfield to Plainville. I think when, you have Plainville's under construction. Springfield is a very depressed community that's saying, hey, these are jobs that we want here. I think it's too far out to pull it back.
And too
I think,
far along?
Yeah, exactly. It's just too far. And I think that those were very compelling messages around work and jobs and opportunity in depressed areas.
And people made peace with the potential social ills argument.
And it's not going to be in their backyard.
Mm. Let's hear a little bit of tape on this story. Here's John Ribeiro. He's chair of the group Repeal the Casino Deal. He says they were outspent by 20 to 1 by the gaming industry. Here's what he said.
We did everything we possibly could to get our message out. Clearly, the money won out in this case. The money was able to get the message out, and the money was not with the people this time.
And casino opponents say they'll file another ballot question for 2020 to repeal the expanded gaming law. But here's Wynn Vice President Robert DeSalvio, who says the company plans to begin construction just after the new year and is eyeing an opening in late 2017.
The voters of the Commonwealth have spoken, and spoken in a big way. By a wide majority, they've approved that the casino resorts in this Commonwealth can move forward. And for us, as a developer, that means a lot, and we can't wait to get started on the project.
So, Rob, when we hear casino opponents say they'll file another ballot question in 2020, is that realistic? Is it conceivable to imagine that it could gain traction so many years after these casinos are going to be built and operated?
I don't think it is conceivable. I think it's wishful thinking on their part. I mean, they're true believers in the cause. I give them credit for getting it on the ballot and for winning in the vote in some local communities through the course of this. They've definitely changed the debate on casinos, but as Susan said, this thing is too far along. There's, steam shovels digging and
right.
bricks and mortar,
yeah.
And the next time around it'll even be farther along,
right.
and state government will be dependent on the revenue coming in from casinos.
John Ribeiro has said that 6 years from now, when law allows, he may try to put this repeal question back on the ballot. Does that just seem like the longest of long shots to you, that could ever, once casinos are built?
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to take a break, but very quickly before we go, I want to just talk about sick leave. Starting in July, most employees will be able to accrue sick time. For companies with more than 10 employees, it will be paid sick time. A lot of union support in passing this initiative, which passed 60-40%. Quickly, Rob and Susan, why such a response on this issue? What do you think, Susan?
Because it affects people. You know, I thought it was interesting when I looked at the four ballot questions. The two issues that actually made people pay money, gas tax and the expansion of the bottle bill, people didn't want to do. And the one issue that actually helped them, and understandably, they supported it. It just, you know, if you're an individual and you say, I might have the opportunity to have earned sick time that I don't have now, you're going to vote for it. The numbers are there.
I think it may have been startling for some people to realize there are people out there that don't have paid sick time.
Right.
And if you exist in a certain economic sector, it may be unthinkable that is not
exactly
an option to you.
Right.
Yeah. This one, it's interesting. Martha Coakley made a mistake on this. It passed 60-40, as you said. She was for it. Charlie Baker was against it. She could have used this to drive turnout, especially with lower income folks who could benefit from this. She didn't do it. I think she missed an opening. Also interesting is today Charlie Baker was asked about it. It passed, Charlie. Are you going to seek to undo it now that you're the governor-elect? And he said, no. The people have spoken. I'm not going to mess around with it. We've had a history here in Massachusetts with the legislature sometimes undoing ballot initiatives when they had the power to do so and disagree with them. Good for Charlie Baker that he's not going to undo it. But it's a dynamic that might have played out to Martha Coakley's benefit had she raised it more earlier in the race.
Rob and Susan, stay with us. We have more of the show ahead.
Yep, and coming up, Seth Moulton on what it's like to wake up a congressman-elect. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is a special broadcast of Radio Boston.